Shabbos Daf Tev Zayin. So we had left off before saying that glass vessels, glass utensils are the same as earthenware. However, if we're going to say that glass is like earthenware, then glass should not become tamei through its outer surface like earthenware. Meaning if something touches the outer surface of glass, it also shouldn't become tamei, just like if something touches the outer surface of an earthenware utensil, it doesn't become tamei. However, we have a Mishnah that says that earthenware and natron vessels are identical for tama. They both can become tame by putting something tame inside of them, and they can convey tuma if the vessel is tame and you put something in there, it can convey tuma to that through its airspace or through an external cavity. Like if you have, for example, a goblet which is raised up at the bottom, if you put something in that cavity on the bottom of it, which is raised up, that can make the utensil, the vessel, tame, but not through its outer surface, meaning if something touches it, it doesn't become tame. And it's only through breaking that it can become tahor. However, we say here that natron and earthenware are identical in their tuma, but nothing else is identical to earthenware. So rather, we say glass is also like metal, because both of them can be fixed when they're broken, because you can melt both of them down and reform them. So glass shares characteristics with metal, namely that it can become tame through its outer surface. However, if that's true, then glass should also share another similarity with metal, that it should go back to being tame when you refashion it. Because we have a Mishnah that says metal can become tamei, and it's tahor if it breaks. However, if you put it back together, it goes back to its original tuma, goes back to being tamei like it was originally. And we have another Mishnah that says wood, leather, bone, and glass vessels can become tamei. They become tahor if they're broken, but if you put them back together and refashion them, they can now become tamei from now on. However, from the fact that it says from now on, that shows that in the future they can become tamei, but they don't revert to their original tuma like metal. So we answer that glass becoming tamei in general is derabanan, and the whole rule that a vessel reverts to its original tuma when it's broken and you repair it, that is derabanan itself. And so on things that are deraisa level tuma, like metal objects, the Rebbeim said, the Rabbanan said that it reverts back to its original tuma when you repair it. However, they did not impose this rule on things that are only derabanan tuma, like glass, so they did not impose this derabanan rule that it reverts back to its original tuma. We have a Mishnah that says that flat glass, meaning like, you know, glass flatware, things like that, doesn't become tame. However, if you have metal flatware, it would become tame, and metal is deraisa, which we know, but flat glass should at least be able to become tame. Why does the Mishnah say that flatware that's made of glass doesn't become tame? It should at least be like metal and at least be able to become tame. So rather, the answer is that the Rabbanan were lenient in one aspect, so that people would know not to burn the truma that came in contact with glass. Meaning, you're right, it should become tame. Glass flatware should become tame. However, the Rabbanan picked one aspect, and they were lenient in that, so that people would know not to burn this truma. And instead, they would know that if it touches glass, which is only a derabanan tuma, that they would only, and it's, you know, you're not sure, then you should only suspend it. And this was a noticeable change, so that people would know not to burn it. Rav Ashi gives a different answer. He says, really, glass has nothing to do with metal. Glass is completely like earthenware. And the reason that, back to our question, the reason that glass can become tame from the outside, unlike earthenware, is because it's transparent. So the interior is basically viewed as an extension of, sorry, the exterior is viewed as an extension of the interior, because you could see the outside and the inside all together. It's all transparent. We basically say that when it touches the exterior, it's as if it's touching the interior, and that's why glass is different than earthenware in that aspect, that it can become tame from its outside. So Shimon ben Shetach said that metal can become tame. He also instituted the ksuba, but for our purposes, we're just focusing on his enactment that metal can become tame. However, what does that mean? Metal, we know, is tame on a deraisa level. So rather, what was Shimon ben Shetach's gzera? It was a decree that metal would revert back to its original tuma when you broke it and you repaired it. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav says, we see this in the story with Queen Shaltzion, who is actually Shimon ben Shetach's sister, and she made a wedding for her son, and all the utensils became tame from a dead body. They were probably all in one room, and maybe somebody died in that room, and it made all the utensils tame, and she went ahead and broke all of them and had them fixed, because she thought that would be a way to get rid of the tuma. But the Rabbanan say, no, they revert back to their original tuma. The utensils are still tame mace from the dead body. body. So why? It's because they wanted to protect the mechatas procedure, which is basically this procedure that they had in place to make utensils that became tame mace, tame from a dead body. That's what you had to do, the mechatas procedure, to make them tahor. It was part of the week-long process to make them pure. They had to sprinkle the mechatas on them. So this answer that it's for the mechatas is good for the opinion who says the Rabbanan only said that the tumma reverts back to its original, that the utensils revert back to their original tumma when you fix them, for utensils that are tame mace. So one opinion says it only applies to utensils that are tame mace. That's the only time that if you fix them, they go back to their original tumma. But there's another opinion that says it applies to all types of tumma, meaning even things that don't require the mechatas. So if the whole gzera was all about the mechatas, and we are extending it, and there's an opinion that extends it even to utensils that were not tame mace and that would have no mechatas, how does that make sense? So Abaye says the gzera is that maybe you're not going to break it enough to render it tahor. So we just said that's not a valid way because we're worried you won't break it enough. And Rava says the gzera is that people shouldn't think that immersing utensil in a mikvah makes it tahor immediately. Because we know that when you immerse something in the mikvah, you still have to wait until that night. But people are going to see, oh look, you could just break a vessel and repair it right away and immediately it's tahor. And they're going to think that putting in the mikvah immediately makes it tahor. So what's the nafka mina? What's the difference between Abaye who says you're not going to break it totally and Rav who says people will think that mikvah makes it tahor immediately? It's in a case where you completely destroyed it and refashioned it into something totally new. Because according to Rav, this is fine because people will know that it's a completely new vessel. They're not going to see it and say, hey, this morning this was tame and then you made it tahor right away. They're going to say, oh, it's two different vessels. They're not going to think that it became tahor immediately. Abaye would still have a problem because he's worried in the future you're not going to totally break the utensil. So what's another one of these 18 laws? So Mishnah says, Beit Shammai says that if you put a vessel under a pipe to receive rainwater, and this is a pipe which is draining into a mikvah to drain rainwater into the mikvah, so you put a vessel under that pipe, whether it's a large or a small vessel, it's made of stone, mud, dung, anything, it disqualifies the mikvah if you pour it into that because it becomes drawn water because it's rainwater that's collected in a vessel. And this is true whether you place it under the pipe intentionally or you forgot it. If you pour it into the mikvah, it's going to make the mikvah puzzle. Beis Hillel says they basically agree with everything, but they say if you forgot it there under the pipe, then it's fine if you pour it into the mikvah. Rav Meir says that Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel, and this is one of these laws that they passed, but Beis Shammai agreed if you forgot it in a courtyard, meaning that you just left a vessel out in a courtyard and it just happened to get filled up with rain, then they would agree that that's fine. Rav Yossi says, no, this machlokas still stands. He's basically saying this is not one of those 18 machloksin because he said there was no resolution because of according to those 18, all of them were ruled and decided like Beis Shammai. And according to Rabbi Yossi, he says this machlokas still stands. So Misharshia says, going on this case, that both agree, both Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai agree, if you placed it under the pipe when it was a cloudy day and about to rain, that would be bad for a mikvah if you poured it in. If you placed it under the pipe when it was a totally clear day and then it just happened to rain like a week later, then both of them would agree that that's fine. The argument is if you placed it under a pipe when it was cloudy, and then it became clear out, and then it became cloudy again, and then rained, Beis Hillel would say it's fine because your original intention of putting it under the pipe when it was cloudy was knocked out from the fact that it became a clear day. And Beis Shammai would say it's possible because we say that your original intention was not knocked out. It's still as if you put it under and while it was cloudy. So going back to what Rabbi Yossi had said, that this is not one of those 18 cases, if that's true, that's not one of those 18 cases, then what is? Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak answers, it's the gzera that Kusi girls we view as Nida from birth, and this is one of those 18 laws that Beis Shammai was proven right, and we say that Kusi girls, we view them as Nidas from birth because we're worried that they weren't careful enough with Nida, so we just say that they are considered a Nida from birth. Shkayach.